You're listening to the Youth Crick Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at WUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at WUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
What line? What is line?
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
Okay.
Action.
What is line?
Take 13. Action.
I did not hit her. Okay. Line.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is...
Hi, I'm Kate.
And today, we are going to be talking about The Disaster Artist.
Oh, boy.
That
sums it up. Oh, boy.
Yeah, it does. It definitely is not a disaster of a movie, unlike the movie it's... The movie it's based off of, so...
The Room.
Yeah, The Room.
You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
For you listeners, just in case you haven't... Just in case you don't know about The Room, check out our review that Kate and I and Jared call in Jordan Suggs.
Hood.
Jordan Hood.
Hood.
We call him Suggs here. Or I do. And we did a review last week, and so if you want to know more about that movie, check out that review, and then actually check out The Room. It's not a great movie by any means, but I would say if you haven't seen that movie, you might want to watch, just not because you'll get lost watching it, but because you'll have you'll probably appreciate the extra perspective you have. Yeah. You will get. So, in other words, as I fix my mic stand, Kate, what did you think of The Disaster Artist?
It was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, it's a really good comedy.
I have never heard Jordan laugh so hard in a movie theater before. Or just in general. Like, Jordan's one of those guys where...
So, the head of KHZ... Is not a funny guy?
He's a funny guy, depending on the topic. But, like, he just doesn't laugh genuinely like I do if we're alone in the apartment watching a movie together.
Right, okay.
But, like, when we went to go see Disaster Artist last week, that mm-hmm. was genuine. And I was just like, oh, damn, this is actually a really good movie. Because my boyfriend's actually laughing. And I thought it was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I enjoyed this movie quite a bit. The word on the street is correct. It is a strong dramedy / bromance /
buddy film.
Well, that's the bromance angle as well. But you're right. I mean, it's just it has a lot of really cool elements, and then of course you have Seth Rogen. You don't have Seth Rogen smoking bongs in this, but
thank fucking God he's actually an actor who actually is pretty good at what he does.
Yeah, and he's doing a really good job as Stacy. I can't remember the last name, but it's the scripty of the movie.
Yeah, he was. This is probably one of my favorite movies that he's in, like mm-hmm. in James Franco and Dave Franco and like the entire gang, because it's not all about pot.
Well, it's about. Well, it's actually, like, a drama, or I don't want to say drama.
It's a dramedy.
It's where it's where they act. It's where, and I don't mean that in a, they're not like Adam Sandlering in their other movies, but they have to, but this is a movie where it actually requires them to play real characters and give a a performance. Shit. A performance. Well, they give a shit in other movies. In all their other work. I think. I think they give more shit. More of a shit in their movies than Adam Sandler has in some of his recent work.
Yeah, I'll give you that one. But it's just, every time I watch a Seth Rogen movie, it's the same one. I've seen Sausage Party 4 times. I know.
I thought you hated that movie.
I do, but it's still hilarious.
Okay.
And I hate the movie, but I also, it's like probably the one of the worst great movies I've ever seen. And then I'm willing to watch over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And I only watch it with, like, my stoner friends.
So, The Disaster Artist, here's the way I see the movie, and we'll kind of, and Kate's not the only person that's going to be on the show. I forgot to mention. There's going to be a couple other people talking about it, because everyone that has seen The Disaster Artist that wanted to be on the podcast is, like, everywhere. They're all...
It's finals week. We're almost done. Catch us a break.
Also, Star Wars is coming out, so yeah, some Star people Wars is out are tonight. Like, so some people are like working and then going straight to Star Wars. It's just been a crazy week to get everyone on board. I was actually really lucky that I got Andy Comer to do the Three Billboards from Ebbing, Missouri episode.
How was that?
It's really good. I mean, it's good, but.
I have family who lives there. That's why I was asking.
Okay. It's good. I don't know if it's completely Oscar worthy.
Oh, really?
If that makes sense.
I've been on that road.
I mean, Frances McDormand is wonderful, as always, but this movie is good, just not
great.
Great. Like I think The Disaster Artist is better than this.
Do you think The Disaster Artist is going to get an Oscar nomination?
For James Franco, yes. For the movie, just depends on how many film nominees we're getting.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this year has been incredible. As Andy and I kind of talked about it on Tuesday's show, it's just been an incredibly packed Oscar season and just a great year for film. So it's been really, even though I know everyone loved Get Out, I'm still amazed that that movie is getting Oscar buzz still because it came out in February. Because it's just, I mean, I completely understand and support that movie's Oscar run. It's just, it's amazing how well it's just been keeping up all fucking year.
Get Out was a really good movie. Like,
oh yeah, I know.
It made you think.
It made you think, and
it scared the living shit out of you.
It entertained you. It kind of, I mean, the Golden Globes really thought it was a funny movie. That's interesting. They nominated it as comedy.
No.
Oh, yeah. It's
not a comedy, though.
I know. That's why I kind of make the joke. Well, I'm glad the foreign press thought it was a funny movie.
Oh, God. it's not a comedy. Like, Disaster Artist is a dramedy. Drama and a comedy.
Yeah, that makes more sense. To put it in the comedy, because there's actual jokes. And there's actual, like, things about it that are funny.
Do you know what Tommy Wiseau, the guy who actually made The Room, do you know what he said about Disaster Artist?
He liked it.
He was 99.9% happy with it. And you know why that 1% was wrong? Or that 0.1? Lighting. At the very beginning of the movie.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was the only thing.
I don't remember that. I mean, but whatever. That's Tommy.
That was what James Franco was saying on a radio show.
But I think, never mind. Anyway.
What?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it doesn't really matter, but some people said that what that 0.1% was different depending on when you were asking Tommy. Like, yeah. His answer changes, so.
Tommy is a strange man.
He's a very interesting fellow.
You still don't know how old he is, where he's from.
Well, according to IMDb, he was born in 1955 in Poland.
But he's from New Orleans.
Yeah, he's from New Orleans, Louisiana.
I'm from the bio.
Yeah. I've never heard of a Cajun person talk like that.
I haven't either, and I was like, do what now?
But then again, I know plenty of people that live in the South that don't talk like Southerners.
Like me.
Yeah. So.
But I trained myself because I knew. Because I grew up with my grandmother, and she was like, do not talk like a Southern person. And even though she has a Southern twang, so I've tried really hard not to have my Southern twang come out, unless I'm mad.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes out full on.
Right, yeah. So here's my thing about this movie, is everyone talks about it's a very inspirational movie, and it is. I mean, the whole idea of the film is, and I think YouTuber I Am That Robbie, before the movie came out, he posted a video about why The Room is so special, and his kind of video kind of encapsulates why I think The Disaster Artist is so special. It's because it's about a person who, despite everything, despite, you know, he put the effort into making a movie.
Yeah.
He put the effort in, and as typical artists do when they put themselves out there, not always, actually, most really good artists don't get laughed at.
How much is he worth?
Oh, I don't know. I can probably check, but...
Like, is that, like, public information?
I think so. I don't...
I hope so. I want to know how much this man is worth.
But... I'm trying, but let me, but that's kind of the idea of The Room. For me, however, I kind of see it as a critique of the torture artist, because
torture artist,
the tortured artist.
Oh, okay. I understand.
Go ahead.
I mean, like, it's like what Jordan said when we were doing The Room. He produced something. No, that can't be. Apparently. He's worth $500,000. What? Oh, he probably blew it all on the Room and the other films that he made.
To be fair, we don't know where he gets his money from anyway.
We think he's a vampire.
Well, he even makes a joke in the movie, but that, and Johnny might be a vampire. Who knows? Yeah, that might be, we might cut that out.
But what was I saying?
Oh, you were talking about the tortured artist.
Yeah.
It's a critique on the tortured artist.
But it's like what Jordan said, the head of KHC Network.
And Productions.
And Productions. He told me, he's like, at least he made something.
Yeah.
That's the goal of a producer, is to make something.
Yeah, that's the goal. I mean, there's other things that go into producing, but that is really the job of the producer, is to make sure
it's like make it a
gets
film.
Finished. Yeah, you make a movie and it gets finished. After that, you can kind of worry about how it gets distributed and whatnot. But he actually did it, and he found a way, in a weird, weird way, to become profitable off of it. Like, he found, you know, I think most people don't understand, because they hear that the movie only made back, I think it was like $1,900.
Yeah. 1987.
Okay. But the thing is, the reason why The Room is profitable is because, you know, when theaters include, like, you know, independent theaters like the Plaza in Atlanta, we'll just use them for an example, when they, you know...
Did they do a double feature?
I don't know if they did that. But I know when theaters kind of bring back movies to do, you know, screenings of, they have to kind of pay a fee to get, like, they have to pay a distribution fee or to get the movie back in the theater. So he's been kind of making money off of that fee for years.
Yeah. Because everybody, like you said, I think last week, they treat this like Rocky Horror. They dress up as the characters.
Right.
And I think that's awesome, because Rocky Horror is my thing.
It's a cult. Yeah, it's a cult hit like Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
But but my kind of way of seeing the movie is, it's a, and you'll hear this a couple more times, is it is very much about the tortured artist, in that it's, or it's a critique of it, because especially the tortured artist who is in search of an identity, because Tommy throughout the film is a character, and we're just going off of the character that's in this movie. I don't know about this for Tommy, and I don't know if this is accurate to real life Tommy. But the character that's portrayed here, he's a man child that is in search of, that wants to embody the American hero dream. Archetype.
Like the dream.
Yeah. Well, that and the hero archetype. The, you know, not beautiful white hero, white knight hero.
Yeah.
And Bob Odenkirk makes his little cameo that and says, you're more of the villain. You have the more malevolent tendencies. And you see that come through. And I think it's, I think James Franco, because there's a scene in the movie where it's a sex scene in the movie, or the, where they're filming the sex scene of the room, where it comes out that Tommy's kind of taking inspiration from artists that have tortured their cast and crew. That, and so I think through this, I think the subtext is Tommy Wiseau is trying really hard to, or Tommy Wiseau wants to be so badly this hero that everyone looks up to, this incredible filmmaker that everyone looks up to, and he's taking inspirations from the wrong people, from the people mm-hmm. who have actually, because in our own stories, we kind of talk in a, not celebrative, but in a, like, praiseful term, in that we have, you know, talked about these crazy stories that have happened on sets of, you know, Alfred Hitchcock movies or Stanley Kubrick's yeah. The Shining with Shelley Duvall. We've talked about how crazy those sets were and how, like, crazy their directors went. And we look at them and go, oh, my God, and just, like, fall in love with those stories, like fantasies. Here, we're seeing the fantasy brought of the room to life, the story of it, and it's depicted as this, like, it's kind of ugly. It's kind of ugly how Tommy kind of made this movie.
Yeah, it is. Like, I remember when we were watching the film and they were doing the sex scene. Like, there had comedic aspects to it, but you were just kind of like looking at this girl and she was like, no, I'm okay. I want to do this. It's going to be okay. And like, she was trying to tell everybody to back off. And Tommy just starts like firing people. I think he fired the DP and, a few other, or he almost fired a few others, and they just got in this full blown argument, and the guy, or Greg, pulled him aside. He's like, dude, you can't do this bullshit. And I was just like, that took me aback, because you're looking at all, again, at the news, and you see all these actresses coming out with sexual harassment suits, and it's just kind of like, wow. Mm-hmm.
That, allegations, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you take a step back and you look at it.
Mm-hmm. I say allegations because for legal purposes, we have to say,
oh, yeah,
it's all allegations.
Sexual harassment allegations, my bad.
Yeah, don't, you're fine. Go ahead. You're fine, go ahead.
But it's just, me as a woman, I would never let somebody do that to me on a set. Like, I would kill you before you do that.
Well, the movie doesn't specify this, or doesn't say this at all, but that was the only time she would actually do the sex scene again.
Yeah.
For the exception of Greg. Like, Greg, I don't know if they did any sex scenes before Greg or not, before Tommy with Greg, but the story was that was the last time she would do a sex scene with Tommy.
Yeah.
Because it was just that fucking insane.
I don't blame her, like, at all.
And awkward, I should say. Insane and awkward.
It's just...
Yeah, it... Yeah.
I'm surprised there's not, like, an allegation against him.
Well...
Honestly.
I think you get that. There probably is, or probably was.
At first, but
It probably got settled. Like, a lot of the... Some of the Weinstein cases got settled.
Yeah.
In that... And I'm kind of doing that, you know, weird... I'm kind of doing that weird, like, awkward face, like... Or the awkward gesture, like...
Like, you just don't know.
Yeah.
You never know anymore when it comes to Hollywood. Hollywood's fucked up. Come to Atlanta. We treat you good with Southern hospitality.
Yes, or we try to.
We have no bullshit.
We in some areas, we're completely nice.
Yeah.
I won't specify where, but we're completely nice in most areas. We do have a Southern hospitality. we do meet that part of the stereotype.
Yeah, that's full on truth. But like, just in general, like towards the end of the movie, the exact same thing happened when they showed it like months ago. Like at the very end when they first premiered the film with James Franco as Tommy Wiseau, and like everybody was laughing and like chanting for him to come up and say something.
Right.
And then now when they first premiered it, like with just like a private audience.
Yeah.
James Franco was really hesitant. He's like, should I invite him up here? Should I not invite him onto the stage for a Q&A afterwards? Should we like just not say anything? And so they didn't invite him up there. And then it was like James Franco, Dave Franco, and Seth Rogen all on stage and like taking questions from the audience. And somebody from the audience comes up and says, hi, I was the original lawyer. Or that's that lawyer, the guy we're playing the football and he falls on the ground.
Oh, the psychiatrist.
The psychiatrist, my bad. He's like, I'm the psychiatrist who was in the movie. And Seth Rogen was like, hey, come on up. What's up, dude? And then James saw Tommy and saw there was like a dark cloud over him. And everybody kind of, and like, James was like, come on up here, Tommy. Come up here. Say hello. And like, he was like not wanting to come up. And the entire crowd stood up and started chanting his name, just like at the end of the movie of Disaster Artist.
Yep.
And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. And
history repeats itself, people.
Or life imitates art.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to kind of round this out, because we do have to get to the next person, it's gonna be like me, the journalist in Citizen. I'm like the journalist in Citizen Kane. I'm like interviewing everyone that saw a movie.
yes.
But so, I thought everyone gave a really good performance, especially James Franco. It was a very nuanced performance, and I typically am 50-50 on James Franco.
James Franco actually played James Dean.
In what movie?
In a TV movie.
I haven't seen that.
You need to. It's like the life and death of James Dean, and it's really good.
Okay.
But I love James Franco. I think he's an amazing actor. I just don't like Seth Rogen. And I think James Franco's little brother's hot.
But he is taken.
I know. I am too, so that's okay. I can look but not touch.
All right.
Sorry, Jordan.
oh, boy. Yeah, I thought this was really well done. The only thing, and I'll get to it, I'll explain a little bit more, but I thought how we transitioned from the making of the movie or the production itself to the premiere, I thought was just kind of clumsy.
Really?
That was just my bit. That's the one thing I would
like
say.
James Franco or Tommy Wiseau? Like in the movie?
No, just how we transitioned from.
Oh, okay.
The making of the movie, like the scene in, like from all the San Francisco stuff to the premiere in LA. Like, I just thought that was a little bit too,
I think too clumsy. It was just showing the strain between Greg and Tommy.
Oh, I know what all the purposes were. It's just how we got from, and it's a definite like second act ender. Like, that's definitely how you would want to end your second act. It's just, we went from, it's just, I don't know how to perfectly describe it, except it just felt a little clumsy, because I would have liked to have seen, I personally would have liked to have seen more. Like, there's a whole part of the book where they go to the flower shop, and it should have been in this movie, because it almost encapsulates Tommy in a nutshell.
Yeah. Wasn't like this Disaster Artist based off of Greg's book?
Mm-hmm. Greg, and I can't remember the other author's book. I'm sure I'll bring it up in the next segment, but yeah, it's based off of the book.
Okay. Well, I'll have to take a look at it whenever I get the chance.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna get, I think not to, this is not a plug or ad, But I think I'm going to finally get Audible just so I can read it.
Audible's awesome.
I know.
It's so much easier because I listen to Audible on my way to school and to home.
Mm-hmm.
I just listen to books and stuff.
Yep. This was not an ad, by the way. I'm just, like, no. saying I want to read this book in some shape or way, and I might finally just get Audible for it. But thanks, Kate, for coming on. Do you have any more thoughts before we move on to the next thing?
It's a good movie, but watch The Room first. It will kill you on the inside out, but Disaster Artist will make it worth it.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say about The Room is, or really The Disaster Artist, it brings you a whole new perspective. Like, I don't know if I can watch the Room the same way now that I've seen The Disaster Artist because of, I mean, I knew some of the production stories that went on in The Room, but as a reviewer, I felt, I'm interested in watching The Room again, but I don't know if it'll be the same way as I've been watching it for the last, like, year or two. It won't be.
You know it won't be. But that's okay.
It's fine. So I would say watch it before and then maybe watch it after Disaster Artist.
Well, that's it for me.
Yep. Kate, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Do you have any plot? Where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Pinterest, pkate2016. Snapchat, pkate443, and then Twitter, I guess. I'm still working that one out. kparker26037.
K Parker?
Yeah, K Parker at 26036037. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Kate. And we will see you in the not so distant future for awesome. Our Christmas stuff and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
All right, see you guys in a little bit. Welcome back, listeners. We are here with Patrick Campbell from Real Film Chatter.
Oh, hello, everyone, from beautiful, sunny Los Angeles, California, where I am stuck in traffic yet again on my way home from work.
Hooray. So Patrick, starting with you, what did you think of The Disaster Artist?
I love The Disaster Artist. I think that it's really interesting that, you know, this movie, The Room, comes out in the early 2000s. It's considered arguably,
here we are, maybe the worst film of all time.
A movie celebrating the making of the worst movie ever. And not only is it a great movie, it's a Academy Award potential type movie with a really fantastic cast on top of it.
Yeah, it's an A24 production. Who knew?
James Franco's a crazy person for not only wanting to tell this movie, but to actually play Tommy Wiseau. And I'm glad he did, because he's really fantastic. He's a great director on top of it, as it turns out.
Yeah, who knew?
I was really impressed. When opening night, had a really good time. I love the way that the movie just, it's a love letter about what it means to be creative and really embracing the things that you do. I thought that was really special. Especially considering this was a movie that, again, is considered the worst movie of all time, and it could have easily been the joke of the movie, but instead of being the joke, it, like, embraces it and uses that to, instead of making fun of it, kind of just being like, we know it was bad, but even though it was bad, like, these people poured themselves into it, and we should embrace that and, like, the love that it created, and, like, now people love this movie even though it's terrible.
Yeah, and also, it's an interesting movie in that, and this is my perception of the movie, I think it's I think it is Franco critiquing the tortured artist, or deconstructing it, because it's a movie about Tommy Wiseau, and he wants to embody the image so much of the American hero.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes about it, and when we're talking about Tommy, we're just talking about the character in the movie. We're not talking about Tommy Wiseau in real life. We're just talking the character per se. And the way Tommy's portrayed in this movie is he's portrayed as a man-child, essentially. A man-child that dresses up very weird and pretends to be from Louisiana. And
pretty much.
Yeah. And he wants to be. And but throughout the movie, he, you know, wants, you know, throughout the making of The Room, as he is directing and acting, you know, talking to Craig about, you know, making the movie. And he wants so much for this to be the American story, the American, you know, tragedy. You know, he wants to have, you know, the American sex scene. It's basically, as he watched the movie, it is basically the interpretation of what, how someone sees our, you know, some of the worst parts of our culture, or the worst parts of American culture. And he interprets it in a way, and it basically comes out in the worst possible way. But in the end, we still oddly celebrate it, if that makes sense to me, if that makes sense to you, anyone. We oddly celebrate, you know, the story, because it is so inspirational. We root for people, you know, the underdog, even if that underdog is a flawed human being. So I feel like The Room is kind of a critique, but also this inspirational story of, hey, if anyone can make a movie, then if you want to make a movie, look at The Room. Look at what, you know, Tommy Wiseau did with, you know, $6 million. It is a piece of crap, and he wasted every dime of it to an extent. But it's still this, but, you know, still go out and do it. And this is the best and worst way of going out with it. So, and that's how I see the film in my interpretation of the movie. But yeah, it's both an inspirational story and a deconstruction of, you know, of the Tommy Wiseau story.
If that, it's so funny too that he's so obsessed with the idea of the American dream that he really wants it to be like a giant John Steinbeck type story. And he says that, like, he wants it to be like this endearing classic. And in a lot of ways, it did become an endearing classic. The movie is so bad, and yet here we are talking about it still. And a movie that got a movie made about the making of it.
Yeah. And that's
fascinating. And the fact that it can outlive what it is, and it really kind of becomes this weird John Steinbeck tragedy where everyone made fun of it when it came out. It's almost poetic.
Yeah.
It's strange, but it's almost poetic.
Mm-hmm. It is. And it's interesting because, I mean, it became this cult audience. I mean, every month, the Atlanta Plaza Theater and the Athens Art Cinema, the Cine, they both play this movie to, like, at least twice a month at midnight screenings and 10 o'clock screenings. I mean, it continues to grow this day, and people still go, and people still do their, you know, spoon thing. People still quote the movie, and as to quote, Mike and Jay from Red Letter Media, it has become kind of like a rock concert. I mean, that's how the movie has become. That's what the movie has become in terms of its cult status. So it's very interesting that a film is, and it really is, like, I can't stress enough, The Room is completely bad.
Oh, it's devoid of anything that would be considered decent filmmaking. I mean, not a single one of the jokes or lines of dialogue really flows into the next. The acting is all over the place. The direction is non-existent. I mean, there's a whole strand of like 20 minutes of the movie that you could cut it out and it wouldn't change anything, because it's 20 minutes that has nothing to do with whatever is supposed to resemble a plot in the film.
Right. And it's just so it's interesting that the movie did, and by synchronicity, by its own, you know, I'm not sure what the word is, but by its own, you know, duality, it's became this, you know, big, you know, thing. And that's really what The Disaster Artist is about. It's about how this thing became, you know, how this thing, you know, was made, and it became the thing. Yeah. But,
and it's really interesting as well, because, I mean, not the movie opens with a lot of filmmakers talking about The Room.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really brilliant, because it's all these filmmakers and actors who they're sincerely talking about the movie. I think that was literally that, like, some of it's clearly scripted, but some of these people are legitimately talking pretty fondly about this terrible, god-awful movie.
Right.
And that's kind of fun, because you realize that even guys like Kevin Smith and J.J. Abrams are kind of like, you know what, man? I like that movie.
Yeah.
and that's, you're kind of like, holy shit, like, that makes sense, but holy shit. I think that alone kind of sets this precedent with the film that you're like, this isn't a movie that's going to mock this thing. It's going to embrace it. We know it's not good, and so let's embrace that thing. And that's a very interesting way to tackle it, and I'm glad they did, because it seems earnest.
Yeah. And Patrick, do you have any flaws with the film in particular?
The most glaring is I get why Dave was chosen, because you had to have someone who could really feel like a brother to Tommy, and considering the Francos are, you know, brothers, it made that bond very believable between them. But I didn't think that he really he wasn't the right actor for that role. As much as I like him in it, he wasn't the right actor for it. And I actually think a better actor for it would have been Zac Efron, who's actually in the movie. I think he would have been, he's much more of like the typical all-American guy than Franco is. Dave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's my big thing with the movie, is that I think that you needed to have someone a little different. Not that Dave is bad. Dave is very good in the movie. But I think you needed someone who could really be that all-American guy type of person that... Because Dave doesn't really feel like that guy. Because it's someone who has to kind of exude exactly what they talk about in the movie about, you know, while they're watching all these classic movies, and, you know, he wanted to be James Dean. He wanted to follow that path. Franco doesn't seem like that guy to me.
Mm-hmm.
But Zac Efron would.
Right. So. Right. Yeah. 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 I agree to an extent. I mean, I think Dave Franco does the job fine, because of course, you know, it's easier to kind of have a bromance. It's easier to have a bromance when you're related to someone, when you have that relationship, that brother, like, you know,
relationship.
So I understand why Franco was adamant to get Dave to do the movie, but also Greg's, you know, if you look back at the movie, you know, Greg's, is it Sinestro? Or Sinestro? Yeah. He's way more taller and way more handsome. And way more, you know, way more of the typical American male movie star than Dave Franco is. Not saying that Dave Franco couldn't be that, but you just don't believe it when you see Dave Franco in this movie.
He's just not James Dean.
Yeah. Whereas, yeah, you could definitely see that in Zac Efron or another actor, another, you know, whatever is the pretty boy of this generation. So yeah, my only flaw with Disaster Artist is that it's a movie where, when we get to the second act or the end of the second act, where the characters are fighting and they're fighting over things that we have, you know, that the characters themselves have been asking about Tommy. Throughout the movie, they've been asking, you know, all these, you know, questions about him and what they think. And Tommy still doesn't give him an answer. And it comes to a point where it pretty much is the last scene we see of this production. And then we go straight to the premiere. We just do a hard cut to the premiere. And I felt, I don't know, it just felt very clumsy to me that we went, you know, we just skipped ahead so much in time, because we know so much more happened in San Francisco when they were doing the exterior scenes, and we know so much happened, and there probably is so much story to be told of what happened in the editing room, like the music choices. So it just seemed really like a hard cut.
And yeah, it jumps ahead a little too long. I could give you that.
Mm-hmm, but other than that, I thought it was flawless. I really did love the scene with Jackie Weaver when, like, after she passed out and they're sitting around, like, eating lunch, talking about why she would, you know, come out and drive 5 hours to be on set.
Right.
It's a really you know, really good scene, and it really kind of encapsulates the whole, you know, the whole reason why people make movies, which is, you know, we just do it for the fun of it. We do it because we're trying to, you know, tell people stories. We're storytellers, you know, and I just loved that scene in general, just that scene, and it was so earnest, and it, I don't want to say encapsulates the whole movie. It just encapsulates the spirit of the spirit of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things, nice little touches I loved about the movie in a movie that really should have been 2 hours. Currently the movie is at 1 hour and 43. I felt like the movie probably could have been a little longer, but other than that, I thought it was a fantastic film. So yeah. So Patrick, do you have any more thoughts on The Disaster Artist?
I hope people check it out. That's really kind of my thing with it, is I just hope people go and check it out. It's a really great movie. It really is one of the best movies of the year. I think it's got all the awards potential in the world. It'll be very interesting to see how well it does at the Oscars, because there's a lot of people who think James is like a front runner for best actor this year for Tommy, which would be very interesting. I kind of still think that it may go to Gary Oldman at the end, just because I think that Darkest Hour will finally get him his Oscar, which would be long overdue.
Yeah.
I can't say enough good things about this movie. Please go see it. Please go check it out. It deserves to be seen. And I have to say, if you've never seen The Room, watch The Room first and then watch The Disaster Artist. You're going to get a lot more out of it.
And also watch The Room at like one of those midnight screenings. Like, I cannot emphasize it enough to see it with a group of people. Because I think I mean, you can see it in a group of people in your own home, but don't see it alone is basically what I'm saying.
No, you won't make it through it.
Yeah. I can attest to that. But yeah. So I really think it's fantastic. As far as Franco getting an Oscar win, I don't know if that will happen still. I think Timothy Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name is the front runner right now.
I don't want him to win. I want Gary Oldman to win.
Right.
I know what you're saying. And I liked Call Me By Your Name too, but it should be Gary Oldman.
And I have not seen Call Me By Your Name yet. It has not premiered in Atlanta yet. But that's just, the last time I checked, it was it's either Chalamet or Franco. Gary Oldman's been kind of in and out of the race since September. Even though people really seem to have liked the movie, it's just, I don't think Focus Features has been putting that much effort into it. And also, the rollout has been really, like, the movie should have been nationwide out by now. That's what I'm... And we're still like we just got it in Atlanta a couple weeks ago. So I think Focus Features kind of is shooting themselves in the foot personally. But yeah. Yeah. All right. So where can the good people find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter at @PJ_Campbell, or Facebook at @PatrickCampbell_PJ. You can find my podcast, Real Film Chatter, REEL Film Chatter, on iTunes and Podbean.
All right, and you can find me at Movie Kale. You can also follow the podcast at The Youth Critic, and you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHD Network. Thanks, Patrick. We will be back with you very soon for Star Wars.
Thank you. It was great.
All right.
When I found you, I saw raw, untamed power. And beyond that, something truly special.